Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. Correspondent Brian Lynn will report on plans by the airplane manufacturer Airbus to test a self-flying vehicle that will transport people high above streets. In our weekly science report, correspondent Ann Ball will tell us how the low price of coal is hurting China's environment. And finally, as we do every Monday, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will begin the story of Richard Nixon, the 37th President of the United States. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Here's correspondent Brian Lynn.
Airbus says it plans to test a prototype of a self-flying vehicle to transport people in the sky above busy city streets. Testing of the air taxi is expected to begin before the end of the year, according to Airbus chief executive Tom Enders. 100 years ago, urban transport went underground. Now we have the technological wherewithal to go above ground, Enders recently told a technology conference in Germany. His comments were reported by Reuters. Enders said that while Airbus is just starting to experiment with flying vehicles, it is taking the developments very seriously. France-based Airbus is one of the largest airplane manufacturers in the world. It makes commercial aircraft, helicopters, and space equipment. The Flying Transporter project is being led by the company's Urban Air Mobility Division. The division was launched last year to explore the use of personal flying machines and helicopter-style vehicles in the future. The vehicles would be part of a taxi-style service, allowing riders to book through an app, the same way as car-sharing companies. Enders said that in many ways, autonomous flying will be easier to manage than autonomous driving. But autonomous flying is still far behind self-driving technology, and therefore will take longer to become a reality, he added. He said his company is investing now in autonomous flying technology to prepare for the inevitable future of self-flying vehicles. If we ignore these developments, we will be pushed out of important segments of the business, Enders said. He added that flying vehicles can greatly reduce costs for city infrastructure projects like roads and bridges. Airbus is looking at using electric vehicles to avoid adding more pollution to crowded cities. Another Airbus official predicted that in as little as 10 years, flying vehicles will be on the worldwide market to revolutionize urban travel for millions of people. Last October, ride-sharing company Uber announced plans to use flying vehicles in the future to avoid ground traffic around cities. Uber's plan would use small, fully electric aircraft that could take off and land like a helicopter without the need for long runways. The company said its flying vehicles would also be much quieter and less polluting than helicopters. Uber has said its planned flying service, which would eventually use pilotless aircraft, could launch within 10 years. I'm Brian Lynn.
Thanks, Brian. Now, here's science correspondent Ann Ball.
Smog is a health concern in many areas, such as China's capital. Beijing started the new year with heavy smog hanging over the city. The skies seemed darker than usual, resulting from the thick clouds mixing with smoke and air pollution. Beijing residents were forced to wear protection from the heavy smog when traveling. Many people wore a mask to cover their nose and mouth. Masks help keep them from breathing the small pieces of unhealthy particulates floating in the air. But China's capital is not alone. Bloomberg News reports that heavy smog has forced more than 60 cities, including Beijing, to declare health alerts so far this year. Last week, Chinese media announced the government is stopping local weather bureaus from making smog alert declarations. This raised suggestions that the government is trying to withhold information about air pollution. The smog has led to delays of airline flights, problems involving shipping and port operations, and school closings in the north and center of the country. In early January, more than 2,000 people were forced to stay on a cruise ship for 2 days because of smog. The thick clouds prevented the ship from reaching the port of Tianjin safely, the Beijing Evening News reported. The same week, three northern ports had to suspend loading of goods on ships for 1 day because air pollution made it difficult to see. The government and environmentalists say the smog is coming from coal-burning factories and power stations. Coal-burning power plants in both China and the United States are responsible for about 40% of the world's carbon emissions. Studies have linked the emissions to rising temperatures in Earth's atmosphere. The Paris Climate Accords aim to slow the release of carbon dioxide and other pollutants into the air. Nearly 200 governments signed the agreements in December 2015. In December 2016, the Chinese government released new 5-year targets for cutting its huge coal production. the plan is to reduce the coal production capacity by 800 million metric tons in 2020, the National Development and Reform Commission said. Chinese officials are trying to restrict the use of coal in the very cold northern parts of the country. Across large areas of the countryside, people burn untreated coal in home stoves to stay warm. Between 1950 and 1980, coal was given to people for free. Today, many Chinese still depend on it for heating. Yao Junhua lives in Qinan. Here, Yao is heard through a translator as he sits by his home stove filled with coal.
I don't think burning coal for heating can cause terrible air pollution. I think it is unfair for them to blame us as the source of pollution. We burn very little coal in villages.
Environmentalists say both the large industrial plants and small stoves are responsible for China's air pollution. Ma Jun is director of the Institute of Public and Environmental Affairs. His words are also translated here.
But for the surrounding areas, it is not necessarily the case that coal burning for household heating is the main source of pollution. The main source of pollution is steel factories and heavy industries, and our priority should be given to shutting down these major polluters.
Recently, the government announced plans to establish a new police force. Its officers will deal with environmental crimes as part of efforts to clean up the air and punish repeat polluters. The government has invested billions in clean energy to cut back on the need for imported oil and gas, as well as coal. Not including large-scale hydroelectric dams, China invested $103 billion last year in wind, solar, and other renewable sources, according to the United Nations Environment Program. The United States spent $44 billion. At the same time, China has promised to build a number of new coal plants. Some Beijing residents are angry about living in a polluted cloud. John Yan, who lives in Beijing, is heard through a translator.
I believe we will eventually resolve the air pollution problem. But the thing is, how long does it take for them to fix this? If they need a few decades, my child will live under the smog all his life, and I will end my life in smog as well. If so, where's the hope?
Some people in China might be trying to escape from the pollution, at least for a short period. Bloomberg says people there are looking to take lung-cleansing trips to Antarctica and Iceland. It says traveler online searches for terms like smog escape, lung cleansing, and forests had tripled during the thick air pollution time. That information comes from a report titled Smog Escape Travel Ranking by the SeaTrip.com website. Warm islands like the Seychelles and the Maldives also made the list. As long as coal remains the cheapest way to stay warm, China will have to continue to work for cleaner air. I'm Anne Ball.
Thanks, Anne. Now we present The Making of a Nation. Today, Steve Ember begins the story of America's 37th president.
I, Richard Bilhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office
that I will faithfully execute the office
of President of the United States.
Of President of the United States.
Richard Nixon was sworn into office on January 20th, 1969. Nixon began his presidency at a difficult time. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. The Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress, and there were anti-war demonstrations in the United States. There were also demonstrations against racial injustice. The issues that divided the nation also divided families and friends. At the same time, fighting the war meant there was less government money available to fight social problems. The last president, Lyndon Johnson, had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all. The new president seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Richard Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money that he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, Nixon served in the Navy in the Pacific. When he came home, he ran for a seat in Congress and won. As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known for his part in the Alger Hiss case.
I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States.
Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusations. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation. Other members of the House thought the issue should be dropped, but Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. While never convicted of espionage, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury that investigated the case. He was sentenced to prison. Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unfair. At that time, fear of communism was very strong. Critics thought he was using the situation for his own gain to improve his political future. In 1950, Richard Nixon ran for the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, competed against Democrat Helen Gahagan Douglas, a former actress and three-time California congresswoman. During the often bitter campaign, he accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. He also said that Douglas was pink right down to her underwear, a reference to her being sympathetic to communism. In response, Congresswoman Douglas gave Nixon a nickname he would never completely lose, Tricky Dick. Nixon won the election. 2 years later, in 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. The candidate for president was Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower and Nixon easily defeated the Democratic Party candidates, Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson and Alabama Senator John Sparkman. They won again in 1956. During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protests during a visit to South America in 1958. The following year, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had what became known as the Kitchen Debate. It took place in Moscow as they visited a model of a kitchen that might be found in an American house.
Давайте так. Телевидение, конечно, можно, но телевидение можно выступать, никого здесь нет, а потом это положите на склад.
The debate was about world peace. Nixon at one point told Khrushchev that he did not know everything, but there were light moments as well.
Не уступает.
My name is Montel. Our minor can match American lawyer.
Адвокату.
No question about that.
Адвокат, вы адвокат капитализма, я адвокат коммунизма. Вот давайте мы посоревнуемся.
All that I can say from the way you talk and the way you dominate the conversation, you would have made a good lawyer yourself.
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily, but he lost to the young John Kennedy. It was the closest presidential election since 1984. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. Then, in 1962, he tried to defeat Governor Edmund Pat Brown, a Democrat, and lost. In conceding defeat, Nixon gave a final press conference in which he told reporters,
"For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Nixon's political career seemed to be over. He moved to New York City and worked as a lawyer. But he made it clear that he was not ruling out a return to public life at some point in the future. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election in 1968. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election. Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under Johnson and had to defend the president's unpopular policies on the Vietnam War. Some Americans thought that the war should be expanded. Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal. Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He narrowly won the popular vote, but collected many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, Richard Nixon spoke to a gathering of supporters. He told them that the great objective of his administration from the start would be to bring the American people together. Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under his plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress objected. Then, in 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were drafted into military service for the war. The new law said young men would now have their names chosen in a lottery system. Many people had criticized the earlier system, which they said chose too many poor people and racial minorities. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution to decrease the voting age from 21 to 18. Supporters of the amendment said if people were old enough to fight and die in war, then they were old enough to vote. The amendment became law when three-fourths of the states approved it in 1971. On another issue, Nixon proposed to build a system to defend against missile attacks. He said it was needed to protect American missile bases. Congress approved the idea in 1969. Critics said it would only intensify the arms race with the Soviet Union. Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the South, Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said Haynsworth had been unfair to blacks in his decisions and that Carswell was not prepared for the job. Congress rejected both nominations to the Supreme Court. President Nixon faced these disappointments and others, but he still had moments to celebrate during his first term. One came on July 20, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
Steve Ember continues the story of President Richard Nixon this Sunday. This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jarmul, Steve Ember, and Geralyn Watson. It was presented and produced by Steve Ember, and we thank them all. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.